This is a meat cleaver. This is also a meat cleaver.
Is it granddad's in the end? It's not.
Yeah.
Which granddad?
Your mother's.
On mother's side. Yeah.
When I was a boy, I found a meat cleaver in my dad's garage. When I struck it, it made a clear sound like a bell. When I started making music for a living in a band called Dead Rat Orchestra, my dad let me take the old meat cleaver on tour. For us, it was a nod towards the traditions of work songs and offered new ways of playing.
Do you know anything about the history of that cleaver or where it came from?
I don't, because that's on your mum's side.
Yeah.
But we wanted more, an array of meat cleavers playing different notes. But when I went into butcher shops and tried to play their meat cleavers, they didn't sound the same. They just sounded dead, flat, tinny. So how do you get from here to here? Forget the butcher shop. Find yourself a sword maker, a bladesmith. Let's call him Merlin.
I've suspended this. It's just a plain sword casting that's been finished and the edges hardened.
So we've got it strung up from the rafters on a piece of string.
As soon as I touch it with my hands, it's
I don't want it to slip out this little precarious noose, is it?
You wouldn't be looking for that all the time. You don't set out to make a singing sword.
But the resonance is in it, and it's really incredible. I could use this live, and it would be absolutely stunning.
Is it really something you want to be walking around with?
Well, I've been stopped in the airport before because of the cleavers. You know, innocently thought that if I could explain they were musical instruments rather than knives, they might let me on the plane with them, but I was told to put that cleaver back in your bag.
Part of Dead Rat Orchestra's mission is to rediscover old instruments and songs and bring them to life again. But the cleaver we are forging today is not for us. Whilst on tour in Denmark, we met Polish folk group Satari. On their CD cover was a photo of them wielding chopping boards, knives, cheese graters, and even an electric whisk. And a meat cleaver. Feeling the power of band love, we set up a joint tour of the UK, and I wanted to give them a present, a new cleaver with a sound as special as my granddad's.
Just this is my charcoal foundry setup, which is bellows, and then it goes into the bottom of the furnace, and the crucible's like a coffee cup with a charge of bronze in.
So here I was, watching sparks fly up from a white hot cauldron of charcoal in a small shed in Cornwall.
There's no sort of instant bronze kit from the past. No archaeologist has dug up sort of a setup like this. They find clues.
It's almost like a clay barrel filled with charcoal, which is already white with heat. And then coming from the side of it, we've got a small metal funnel, which leads to two round bellows.
Charcoal gives off carbon monoxide, and when it mixes with air, it flashes and catches fire. So if you backdraw on a set of bag bellows, you suck the super hot carbon monoxide back down the tube, you get big flames between your fingers, so this avoids that.
And what about the alloy? So what's actually in the crucible right now?
We've got 21% tin and the rest is copper. This is Cornish tin, so it's got a bit of arsenic and a bit of copper in it, so it gives it the ring to it. And if I bend it, it's a purity test called the cry of tin. Copper's the same. It's this is a bit of Cornish copper as well. You can just hear it. There's no real sound to copper until you mix it with another metal. So we're going to bring it up to probably about 1170 centigrade for about 20 minutes, slowly poaching something. And hopefully it casts us a nice little cleaver.
So it's not far to go. I'm watching the gauge, if you can see it. Right, that's it.
It was time to start pumping the bellows.
Can you see the temperature?
900 degrees centigrade already. With each pump of the bellow, it's going up. Now by 2 or 3 degrees with each pump.
So, as you know, Dad, I've been researching rough music and making these bronze cleavers, and you told me about your mum. She was from a village in Suffolk, right?
A small hamlet called Ixworthorpe.
So what exactly do you remember about what she said?
About what? Anything?
About rough music.
Oh, well, rough music. Well, she used to talk about the rough band who would come round to houses probably in the evening and make a lot of noise outside if they disapproved of the people inside or how they'd been behaving.
Why would she tell you this story?
I don't know, because it's in her memory, you know. Like she used to talk about the murder in the Red Barn, which was in the 1820s, wasn't it? The 1830s. But that was, you know, they're still talking about it in Suffolk.
Really?
Yes.
But she remembers the rough band from when she was a little girl?
Yes.
You think of this as a very old thing, but in fact, it happened just recently with President Trump's visit when they all assembled in Regent's Park to try and keep him awake at night by banging kitchen utensils and dustbins. So it's sort of suddenly re-emerging.
Jeremy Barlow is a sort of sonic detective, excavating the sounds of the past.
We're in Germany's library filled with engravings and manuscripts and books and looking at some original Hogarth prints, is that right?
His picture of the rough music includes the cow horn. It also includes bagpipes. And the third instrument are the marrowbones and cleavers. And there are descriptions of butcher boy apprentices actually making them in bronze and having them tuned so they could actually play tunes.
When I started making music with meat cleavers, I thought I'd found something new. But of course, it's an old story.
There's a chap banging a marrowbone against a cleaver. Another one there. What probably started the whole business of the marrowbones and cleavers goes back to 1660, which, you know, is the date of the Restoration. And there was something called the Rump Parliament, and that was shut down shortly before Charles came back in March 1660. And the butcher's boys celebrated that by burning rumps of beef, and they banged their marrowbones and cleavers.
Each time I pump the bellow, you can actually see the flames jumping higher.
Back in the foundry in Cornwall, the alloy from which the bronze cleaver would be cast was steadily heating up.
Can you just see there's a hint of green on the yellow flame? That's a bit of copper coming off the charcoal, a bit of copper oxide.
Our faces glowed as sparks showered out into the dark room. Our target was a frightening 1,060 degrees centigrade.
Is it climbing? Yeah, we're over 1,000 now. We're at 1,050 degrees.
It's a bit sort of magical, isn't it?
It makes you feel like it's alchemy. Oh, I've nearly crept up to 1,200 now.
Yeah, that's all right, it's fine. He's playing with rhythm again. You can't keep this man away from rhythm.
Each time I do it, this breath of flame coming up from the furnace, and it really does look like a flaming crown.
Rhythm is also vital to blacksmiths. It's an integral part of working with hot metal.
What's happening here is they're actually restoring the bandstand. So we're at Parade Gardens in Bath, and we've got 25 blacksmith forges, and they're all coming together and they're collectively working on one new iron grate for the bandstand.
I was surrounded by the greatest gathering of smiths I've ever seen, attempting a Herculean task.
Flaming coals and hammering on anvils, and it's this great cacophony of sound. It's marvellous.
Bath Iron Festival had invited me along to sing at the opening ceremony, a ritual they called Invoking the Iron.
I've got basically an hour to get all these blacksmiths on board to muck in with the performance. So.
I moved carefully through the smoke and sparks where Adam and Ambrose were hard at work.
So each hammer blow the smith makes, the striker will follow and do exactly the same.
We've got two people working together, hammering the same piece of metal.
Yeah.
In tandem, you know, incredibly fast rate.
Yeah, and that sound and rhythm, you can't watch it, you have to hear it. If you start watching it and trying to figure out what each person's doing, you'll clash the hammers.
You can tell how good an anvil is by it ringing, but this is why we hit it here under the body. There, it's more ringing like a bell.
Yeah.
There you go, that, but you can hear, when the metal's really soft and moving, it has like a dull thud, and the sharper the noise gets, it's telling you that the metal's getting colder, making a horrible noise rather than the soft, squishy noise. It's time to put it back in the fire and get it hot again.
And what about blacksmith music? Do you have any?
There's quite a lot of references to blacksmiths in particularly folk music.
Yeah.
Lots warning people about to look after their daughters in the month of May, but the harvests haven't happened yet, so he hasn't got so much to do. Okay. The devil makes work for idle hands.
Like a journey to the centre of the earth, isn't it? Going deeper and hotter.
And the embers flying into the air. It does make you feel this elemental power of the fire and the flames.
Having witnessed the mysterious art of bronze casting, I could understand the traditional suspicions surrounding the blacksmith's trade. There's an edge of danger and even magic.
It gives you an idea what volcanoes are like.
This digital thermostat that we're watching, which is just creeping higher as well. Now we're 1100. 1160 is what we're heading for.
Yeah, 1160.
Beautiful showers of embers now, just sparks flying into the air.
So by throwing a handful of charcoal on top of the furnace, it acts as a sort of heat trap. It's 1160 already.
We're at 1160 now, so now do I just reduce the speed and just try and maintain it there?
You steer it like a canal boat.
So how would those Bronze Age smiths have worked it out?
You can reach down inside the fire with a stick, and if the bronze is liquid, you can feel it on the end of the stick. It floats. It's like putting a stick into mercury, so it's quite dense, and you can feel the resistance.
Well, the blacksmith was never really trusted. He was always needed, but you're doing magic, aren't you? You're using fire and earth and stuff to make things that people need, and people don't know how you do it. That's why there's respect and mistrust for the blacksmith. Often the blacksmith's made to live on the side of the village, but also he's the right-hand man. Blacksmith used to sit on the right of the king, and the priest would sit on the left. Because you can do without God, but you can't do without the tools. In English culture, he's the only person who can marry you apart from the priest.
Oh, really?
Which is where the saying forging a relationship comes from. Because only the blacksmith can do it.
I didn't know that.
Because the other thing I think of when I think of rough music traditions and weddings and is the tying of cans to the back of a car.
That's another word for this rough music. It was called tin kettling. And as you say, it still goes on with lager cans being tied to the back of the car.
Jeremy Barlow, author of The Enraged Musician.
Cleavers were also used to kind of turn up at wedding parties and make a big ruckus, and then they'd make so much noise and they'd expect to be paid to leave.
That's exactly that, yes. I mean, Hogarth and in this picture of the wedding taking place. You can see the drummer is being paint off there at the window. And can you see there's a chap banging a marrowbone against a cleaver? The other thing that is part of the tradition is Guy Fawkes, because they would let off fireworks and fire rifle shots as well. It goes back quite a way. But there's always this sort of ambivalence about both celebration but also latent violence along with celebration.
If you'd like to join me, I'm going to be singing a song called The Twy Magicians. It's an old British folk song, and it's about blacksmiths, and it's about shapeshifters and alchemy and that kind of magic, and it's about love.
So I'm standing on the bandstand, surrounded by blacksmiths and their forges, ready to invoke the iron.
Make some noise.
A choir of anvils in the heart of Bath.
Then she becomes a little pearl at the bottom of the sea, and he becomes an oyster shell to trap it, then will she. And then she says, how dare ya, you don't set me free, and I'll become a boulder and shattered you will be. So bye, sticky bye.
So, as you know, Dan, looking at the history of using noise as social control, and, you know, because...
Yes.
And when I told you that for the very first time, you told me about your mum's memories.
But she's definitely remembered the rough band.
When she said the rough band, do you remember what she said they used?
Well, anything that makes a noise, saucepans.
Do you think she was in one, or do you think...
No, I don't think so. She was one of eight children. No, I can't. I'm not going to make things up.
So it might have been something that she remembered hearing when she was...
Possibly, possibly, yeah.
I mean, it must have been quite a thing in a cover of darkness to...
Yeah, that was the sort of inference that usually happened in the middle of the night, you know. I mean, I assume it was sort of social and, you know, or just because somebody wasn't liked, maybe.
Do you think so?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
But do you...
I mean, you know, they had to be careful what they said to people, because you could, you know, you could lose your job with the farmer if he heard you talking out of turn. It was all yes, sir, no, sir, wasn't it, you know. Say thank you to the gentleman, you know, and all this. But that was a way of getting back at that, maybe, you know. You'd come out at night, you old bastard. This isn't going out live, is it?
He's kitted up now with full face protection gloves, and he's moving the mould into position and getting his big iron tongs out. Do you want me to keep pumping?
No, stop.
Stop now? Okay.
It was time to pour.
Everyone goes dead quiet. So what we just saw was brushing aside the red-hot coals from on top of the crucible, bringing it out with his tongs, pouring a molten liquid straight into the small wooden mould, and all we can see now is a little red nub glowing and slowly, slowly dimming. It's surrounded by charcoal burn on the wooden mould around it.
Which is a bit of incense on the pouring cup. Can you smell it?
So you've just put a pinch of frankincense directly onto that kind of smouldering, glowing hub, so it melted onto the bronze itself while it's still
just
hot.
Just on the top of the pouring cup.
You just have to watch it. You can't talk over it or interfere with it.
That's
you just,
true.
It's literally a sense of awe.
And when you see the liquid transfer across, it is like a portal or something to some kind of different dimension.
It reminds, last night we were out watching the sunset over the Cornwall Sea, and there was that moment where I said it looks like a slice into another world right now, and this is the same slice that we're seeing now.
Same sun. I think when we were casting before, we had a couple of miscasts, didn't we?
Do you remember when we tried and we put the tin alloy really...
Hot into water.
And it came out of the cast, and then when we hit it for the first time, it just shattered like glass.
Casting a cleaver is one thing, but you also need to find a way of letting the metal ring cleanly.
Open it up and see what we got. Be interested and see what's happened.
My meat cleavers, I just simply couldn't get them to resonate, and I wondered how the butcher's boys did.
Jeremy Barlow is not only a writer, but a musician too.
When we first tried to make one that rang, we just made the blade and shoved it in a handle and expected it to ring.
Yeah, and it didn't.
It didn't ring at all.
And then you've got your beautiful things here, and you've solved the problem by...
I'd taken my collection of meat cleavers for him to try out.
You've got the handle suspended very cleverly, so it does ring. That's just flicking it with my fingernail.
So if I hit it with a piece of wood, you get a much...
Oh, yes, great. And are they tuned? Okay, it's more or less... Oh, right.
And then what we realised is my granddad's meat cleaver is something very special about it, so the blade goes all the way down to the handle and ends with a tang.
Oh.
And that's why that one rang out. This is based on the unique property, as far as I can tell, of my granddad's meat cleaver.
Oh, yes.
But tone-wise, it's...
Oh, yes, different sound again.
Yeah.
Shall we take this outside?
So I knew from experience
see what we got.
That a clear bell sound was possible, but not guaranteed.
And so you're gearing up now to open the mould.
Yeah.
And it's only been a few minutes. Does it cool down that quickly?
It's like being in your sleeping bag or under the duvet in the morning. If I was to drag you out and throw you in a cold shower, you'd not be enjoying it.
I like the idea that we're waking up this object.
Yeah, right. We're going to undo the screws on the box.
So I've just opened the mould for the first time. Wow. There we have a cleaver. It kind of takes your breath away.
Shall we see if we can lift it out? Do you want to have a go?
Sure. I'd love to have a go. Oh.
It's got quite a ring already.
Yeah. Safe to touch, but still very, very hot. I wouldn't want to touch it for too long. And it's almost got some kind of cracks and fissures naturally.
Literally where the bronze is like chocolate, it's just poured over itself and not joined.
So shall we have a little listen to it?
It's not tapping a rhythm on it already.
So that's fresh from the mould, and that's not bad, is it?
I was a bit surprised by that. I didn't... Yeah. We'll saw off the casting debris next, and that'll make it a clearer tone.
So we can put a handle straight on it and
definitely
and get it working. The destination of this cleaver, basically, Neil, is Sitari, who are a Polish band that we met last year at a festival in Denmark. They're amazing. They're basically a bit like Dead Rat Orchestra, but female, and using the Polish folk tradition instead of the British one. And when I first met them, basically, I saw their CD cover, and one of them was holding a meat cleaver. So they use also meat cleavers and kitchen knives and cheese graters and bowls of water within their music, you know.
Really?
So that, you know, there's a real resonance with what we've been doing.
They sound almost as mad as you.
So now we've got it. Should we put it in the handle and see how it sounds?
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear it.
Really high pitched. Little imperfection. Let's see if it bows.
And so a few weeks later, I found myself with fellow Dead Rats Dan and Robin in a strange and fabulous East End garden, preparing for the final song of our concert with Sitari.
The Nest Collective have been doing these campfire clubs, what they call them, which happen in secret locations all around London. And I mean, this one is definitely a secret location.
They call it the village. It's full of old theatrical props, sheds. We've got like a mini church hall, an ice cream stand.
And you go through this little leafy portal and suddenly you're just transported into a completely other world.
We're just setting up for tonight, rehearsing for tonight's concert.
In front of us, we've got two logs which Dead Rattles have been carrying around for a couple of years performing on. We've got about 9 meat cleavers that have all been produced down in Cornwall. We've got a cheese grater, chopping board, and six musicians ready to go.
So whilst we've been on the road, the idea is, why don't we try and make something all together using meat cleavers, both Dead Rat Orchestra and Sitari?
Our song, actually, which we'll be mixing with boys, is actually about broken heart and not happy love. And it's very, very, very old.
The Dead Rat Orchestra piece is a piece we've been doing for years now. It's a song collected by Alan Lomax in 1954 in Leon in the north of Spain, and it's a work song. It's a perfect time to introduce Sitari, who've come over from Poland. It's only their third concert ever in the UK. What we're playing on here, so these are bronze meat cleavers, and this is what first drew us together as a band, the meat cleaver of all things. And there exists such a thing as band love when one band falls in love with another, and that happened. And so a couple of weeks ago, I went back to see Merlin, the sword maker, who works with me to create these cleavers, and we made one for you as a gift.
So,